in Boston.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The diagnosis is medical meltdown. Mad as hell over skyrocketing malpractice insurance costs, some doctors say they are not going to take it anymore. Surgeons in West Virginia walked off the job on New Year's Day. A similar job action was narrowly avoided in Pennsylvania, at least for now. Last year, Texas doctors hung up their stethoscopes in protest. America's healthcare corridors are in an uproar, and there's plenty of scalpel pointing going on over who is to blame. Greedy insurance companies, incompetent doctors, ambulance-chasing lawyers, patients who sue, juries that award too much money. Now, legislators are ready to step in and set some limits, but is that right? Tonight, On Point, America's medical malpractice crisis and the search for a cure. Should we cap malpractice awards in the courts, or is the right to sue and win big sacred in America? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin tonight in West Virginia, one of the nation's costliest states for medical malpractice insurance coverage. Dr. Gregory Sirocco is a general surgeon who's taken leave of absence from Wheeling Hospital, and he is a leading voice for malpractice reform. Good evening and welcome, Dr. Sirocco.
Good evening, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for being with us. So we've all heard about the West Virginia doctors in the panhandle there who are off the job. Paint the picture for us. Is this some kind of political publicity stunt, or do you have a real problem there?
We definitely have a problem. We've got probably, if not the highest, some of the highest malpractice rates in the country. And, you know, we had about 29 commercial insurers that were licensed to do business in the state of West Virginia.
Okay.
All have pulled out but one.
Now, when you say malpractice rates, you mean insurance premiums for coverage for malpractice to protect you if you're sued by a patient who says something was wrong.
That's correct.
How bad is the problem? Give us your personal circumstances.
I'm a general surgeon. I have a very good record. I was involved in one lawsuit in 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
Was eventually dismissed from the case. There was a small settlement paid. My rates this year are about $73,000.
That's just for malpractice insurance to cover your personal practice.
That's correct. $40,000 of that is my state premium. We're insured by the state now, as no insurers want to write malpractice in this state. And I had to buy a tail when our commercial insurer notified us all that they were going to not renew. Well, I had to buy a tail for prior act coverage that cost $96,000.
This is a supplemental coverage to completely cover yourself.
That's correct. And that's not really supplemental. It's just to cover any suits that might arise from work I did in prior years.
And this is $73,000. How does that compare with prior years? Has this been fairly constant?
No, our rates have gone up significantly. The insurance companies were asking for 35% increases just about every year, and the insurance commissioner was giving them 15 and 20%. So, yeah, they've doubled in the past 5 years.
So at your hospital and several others in that area, surgeons are you don't describe it as on strike, but taking a leave, and it sure looks like a job action. How did you all come to the decision to do that? Why?
Well, we can't afford it anymore. We're being pinched on both ends. You know, our reimbursement is down tremendously, and in West Virginia, we're reimbursed at the lowest rate of the Medicare scale. So you keep taking away from the top end, and you keep increasing the cost of doing business, and before long, you're not doing business anymore. And medicine is a business. You know, we have an office to run, and you have staff to pay. And when you get to the point where you're borrowing money to pay your malpractice premiums, then you say there's something wrong.
And are people at that point?
Yes.
So what is to blame, or who's to blame for this mess, Dr. Sirocco?
I don't know that anybody's to blame. I think we're all to blame. It's a society problem. You know, we hear it in our young children now. They see a car accident, and they say, gee, I wonder if they're going to sue them. I mean, this is ingrained at an early age. Everybody feels that they're not responsible for their own actions anymore, and somebody else should pay. Patients feel that because they have a bad result, and we're not talking about malpractice or negligence, just a bad result, that somebody mm-hmm. should pay for it. And that thinking has to stop.
We read of doctors saying they don't want to practice defensive medicine, ordering unnecessary tests out of fear of litigation. Do you feel that kind of pressure?
Absolutely. So much of what we do is defensive medicine. And I've read estimates that the cost of defensive medicine, unnecessary tests to keep the lawyers at bay, the cost of that's going to reach $100 billion.
That is unnecessary treatment.
Not so much treatment, but testing.
testing, all right, but to sort of to cover your hind end in case a lawyer comes after you.
Exactly. It's just like as a general surgeon, I see patients with possible appendicitis. You can't see a patient with appendicitis today without ordering a CAT scan. You don't need a CAT scan to diagnose appendicitis.
But if you don't, what?
Well, if you don't, then we can only make the diagnosis of appendicitis preoperatively correctly 80% of the time.
Okay.
20% of the patients that you operate on that you feel have appendicitis will probably have a normal appendix and they'll have some other condition
mm-hmm.
that didn't need an operation. Well, that 80% is the perfect number.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to operate on 10 patients that I thought had appendicitis and all 10 of them had appendicitis, that means that I'm operating too late.
But you're saying then if you operate on someone who ends up not needing it, you may be sued for unnecessary surgery.
That's correct. And you can order all the CAT scans you want, and it's not going to help you with the diagnosis of appendicitis, but that's a standard we're being held to today.
We also read that doctors are saying they don't want to evaluate new patients for signs of litigiousness instead of disease, but they sometimes do.
Absolutely. Patients... You find yourself in an adversarial relationship with patients as soon as you meet them now. And a good example of this was driven home last week while this walkout or leave of absence was being planned. A colleague of mine who's an orthopedic surgeon was evaluating a patient with a fractured hip
okay.
who had many, many medical problems. And he said to the patient's wife that maybe this patient would be better off in a tertiary care center, a university-type center.
That means a more sophisticated care
That's
center?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. All right.
He looked at him and said, well, if I go there and something goes wrong, who do I sue?
Ooh.
Now, this is the first word out of this lady's mouth.
So patients are coming in ready to roll.
That's
if
right.
If you see that, can you walk away from such a patient?
You can. You can, but, you know, you're at risk now because you've already established a relationship with that patient.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other thing we read is that doctors feel this kind of pressure, hard to admit to, but a pressure to squeeze extra patients into their schedule so they can pay down their insurance premiums, their malpractice premiums.
I don't know about that. I can't do any more surgery than I do, and I don't do unnecessary surgery, and I turn a lot of surgery away. Patients will come to my office being told by their family physician that they need an operation, and when you evaluate them, you think, well, maybe they don't. So I can't say that I squeeze extra patients in, but you're sure pushed because the reimbursement's not there, and I can't do any more cases.
And the premiums are high. Last night, your governor in West Virginia, Bob Wise, gave his State
right.
of the State address, and he went head-on at this. He must be worried about a kind of wave effect of other doctors
yeah.
walking off the job or walking out of West Virginia. He laid out several points to try and address this, including a base cap of $250,000 on awards for pain and suffering and a $500,000 cap on liability for medical providers, including doctors and emergency workers in the trauma care system. Will that do it? Do you feel like you've got help on the way?
We do. I think we do have help on the way. You know, I was fortunate enough to have an audience with the governor last Thursday on the first day of our leave of absence, and we spent an hour and a half with the governor, and he knows it's a big problem. And these are the terms that I never thought I'd hear coming out of the governor's mouth, but he is talking about significant caps on liability. He's talking about joint and several liability. He's talking about collateral source rules. And he's also talking about helping us with economic relief with these exorbitant premiums that we're paying.
This would be a whole new world. Are you going to hold out and take the whole month off, Dr. Sirocco?
I hope I don't have to. I met with the governor's representative today, and he explained the plan to us, and the plan is what we've asked for. We just have to make sure now that the legislature is behind it. And if I find that the legislature appears to be behind it, I think it's time to go back to work and let the system work.
But it's interesting. The whole society, the whole country is kind of primed up for action right now, and you may just be getting it in West Virginia. Gregory Sirocco, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Dr. Gregory Sirocco joined us from Wheeling, West Virginia. He's a general surgeon at Wheeling Hospital. He went on leave on New Year's Day along with a lot of other doctors there saying, we can't afford our malpractice insurance premiums anymore. I want to turn to Julie Ravner. She's joining us from Bethesda, Maryland. She's health policy correspondent for National Public Radio. Good evening and welcome, Julie Ravner.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining us tonight, Julie.
Sure.
Julie, you have followed this malpractice battle for some time on Capitol Hill now. It seems to come and go. It's very hot right now. What's going on? What's the political frame around around the debate we've seen in West Virginia and in many other states across the country?
Well, I've been doing this for so long, I remember when we last went through this, which was in the late 1980s. Again, it was the same sort of situation. Premiums were spiraling. Physicians, mostly in the high-risk specialties and surgery, particularly obstetrics, people who deliver babies, were having to drop out because they couldn't afford their insurance premiums. In fact, my OBGYN, I remember, during that last crisis, stopped delivering babies. So I was part of this personally in the last time around. What happened? The economy got better. Premiums started to go down again. We didn't hear very much about it. In the mid-1990s, when the Republicans took over the House of Representatives and the Senate, the House passed a bill several times that would impose these sorts of caps on non-economic damages. Those are the pain and suffering damages. It's never gotten through the Senate. The House continues to try. The most recently, they passed it again last fall, passed fairly narrowly, actually, by 217 to 203. That was as this current crisis was just ginning up before, of course, we saw these actions in West Virginia and Pennsylvania, but after we'd seen the crisis in Nevada last summer when the trauma center closed down.
Right.
So, indeed, there's a lot more political fuel for the fire, if you will. The House is expected to take this up again fairly quickly. Partly that's because the main issue on the House health agenda is Medicare reform, and they're not really ready for that. So, in some ways, malpractice reform is a placeholder for the House. It's something that they've passed before. They have the bill in front of them. It's kind of easy to bring up, and they know they're going to pass it.
Julie, this is a very partisan issue. Why? What are the battle lines?
Well, it's largely a partisan issue, and it has really, over the years, fallen, you know, into the doctors versus the lawyers. And over, in very general terms, the doctors, and by doctors I mean the American Medical Association, has strongly supported the Republican Party politically. The trial lawyers, the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, have strongly supported the Democratic Party. So if you sort of look at it broadly, it's always been the Republicans with the doctors versus the Democrats with the trial lawyers.
And now you've got a Republican president who's very much against kind of big settlements that we've seen in Texas, I guess, is taking steps in the direction of putting caps on. George Bush would like to see that nationally, would
he not? Indeed. George Bush called for this last year. He supported it in the campaign. So his call for this goes back to before this current round of premium spikes. But again, this is something the Republicans have been for a long time. This sort of current crisis is just giving them sort of more opportunity to push it.
Julie, what is the cyclical nature of this debate about? Why do premiums become terribly painful and then they recede as a pain point and then they come back again?
Well, there's a lot of dispute about this, but certainly the people on the lawyer side and the consumer group say that you can track these premium spirals right with the economy, that insurance companies make a lot of money off what they call the float, the time they get the premium and the time they actually have to pay out payments. And when they're doing well in their investments, they can keep their premiums low because they're getting all that money from investment income.
For example, when the stock market is riding high, they can take that cash they're sitting on, put it in the market, make a great return, and they don't have to charge as much.
Yeah, although people have pointed out it's not so much the stock market as the bond market when interest rates are high, because they tend to invest fairly conservatively. So when interest rates are high, they do pretty well. They put it in bonds, and they make a lot of money. Right now, interest rates, as we all know, are very, very low, so they're not making any money on this float. That's why they've had to raise premiums. Now, this particular cycle seems to be complicated by some other factors. There were a lot of companies that got into the malpractice insurance business in the 1990s when the economy was so good they could make a lot of money. A lot of those companies are leaving, and there's literally a problem with capacity of companies to take people. There are more doctors than there are insurance policies available.
Then as we see the politics lining up and the economics, are we on the cusp here of seeing a fundamental change in Americans' access to the courts for satisfaction if something goes wrong at the doctor's office?
Well, we never have before. That's what I was trying to say. This has been tried many times. The United States Senate has long been a graveyard for tort reform. Now, they're definitely going to try again. Senator Bill Frist, the new majority leader, a physician, is somebody who has certainly supported malpractice reforms. But the last time the Senate voted on this was really only a couple of months ago. It was last July during a debate on an unrelated drug bill. They came up with a much watered-down malpractice limit. It didn't have any caps on non-economic damages, the pain and suffering damages we hear so much
about.
And
what was the vote?
And the vote was 57 to 42. So only 42 members voted for the very watered-down version. Again, the Republicans are now in control, but it was only a two-vote swing.
So this may stay in the states or may have to see a different treatment at the federal level. Julie Ravner, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We are talking tonight about America's medical malpractice crisis, I guess. Doctors on strike, premiums over the moon, patients in the lurch. Should we cap malpractice awards, or is the right to sue and win big sacrosanct in America? Do you want your doctor fearful of a big suit if he or she makes a mistake, or fully focused on medical care? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's malpractice crisis, about doctors on strike and premiums over the moon, and in some corners of this country, patients in the lurch, as in West Virginia, where doctors have just walked off the job. You can join us tonight. Should we be capping malpractice awards, or is the right to sue and win big sacrosanct in America? Do giant court settlements make more attentive medical practitioners? Or are giant settlements wrecking American medicine? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking with Julie Rovner. She's health policy correspondent for National Public Radio. I'm joined in the studio now by Leo Boyle. He is past president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, represents patients in medical malpractice cases. Leo Boyle, good evening and welcome to On Point.
Tom, thanks for having me on, and thank you very much for doing this issue. I think it's of great importance to American families and the consumers of this country.
We know you do. We want to hear straight away, though, what you think of what you've just heard from a doctor in West Virginia, from Julie Rovner on the national scene here. As a trial lawyer, do you buy that we've got a crisis here, or is this something that's being whipped up by political forces beyond the facts on the ground?
Your exchange with Julie hit this nail precisely on the head. You have to look at this in a larger context. It's all about the economy. When insurance companies can make their money in two ways, they charge premiums and they invest. When you have a good market, premiums stay flat or low. If you have a bad market, premiums go up. You can go back to the late 70s, the first so-called premium crisis. Real estate crashed. Premiums went up. Who got blamed? The patients, the lawyers. Go forward in the 80s, junk bonds. We had a wonderful run of an economy in the 80s. Junk bonds kicked in. Premiums went up. We got blamed.
So wait, the lawyer is going to say in this case it's not at all about the size of the settlements. It's all about the economy. It's all about the insurance companies not managing their businesses better.
It's 100% about the economy. Just look at the 90s. Let me just give you a little window. That decade, insurance premiums went down or stayed level from 1990 to 2000. Mm-hmm. Now, the cost of delivering medicine went up 75%. Everything else in society went up 75%. And at the end of the decade, we had an economic meltdown. The NASDAQ got creamed. The stock market lost 4,000 points. Suddenly, the insurance companies say, now juries are irresponsible and are returning irresponsible verdicts. It's simply false. Anyone who's honest about what American juries do will tell you the truth. In Massachusetts, just example, we're sitting here.
All right.
94% of jury verdicts in med mal cases come back for the doctor.
That means against the plaintiff.
Against the patient. Mm-hmm. 6% come back for the patient. Now, nationally, it's like two-thirds, one-thirds. The vast majority come back for the doctor. Juries are incredibly responsible. And what's sinister and cruel about this discussion now is that in order to reward insurance companies for reckless investment practices, poor underwriting, we are now going to take away the legal rights of the most profoundly injured citizens in our society. So let's take the family of a child brain damaged at birth, and dad or mom has to stay home to take care of that child.
And you mean brain damaged because of the way in which that child was delivered.
Of negligence. Remember, the chances of winning their case in the best state are 1 out of 3. Now we're going to put a cap on them, a cruel cap, so that that family can go into bankruptcy. Not only do they have to take care of that child, but they're going to go bankrupt. No state has ever had premiums reduced by a cap. No state. West Virginia has a cap.
What do you mean they haven't had premiums reduced by – even if you have a cap, the premiums don't go down?
No, they don't go down.
Well, that doesn't make sense.
It does if you understand that it's all about the economy. That's all it's about. Let's look at California. California has a cap. California is held up as the model that everybody wants to follow.
Yeah.
The second largest carrier has – rates have gone up 44% in the last 3 years. That's a state with a cap. Missouri has caps. Premiums are going up. West Virginia itself has caps.
How many states have caps nationwide? Do you know now?
I'm
growing.
I'm sorry, I don't.
But it's still a relatively small number, isn't it?
No, it's a larger number. I can't give you the exact number.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that. But in these states where the cap, which everybody on the medical side wants, is in place, it doesn't make any difference in premiums, and you are destroying the lives of families. And that's simply – we shouldn't be rewarding insurance companies for bad investment practices.
Julie Rovner, what do you make of Leo Boyle's description of what's going on here? Does it jive with reality as you know it?
Well, one of the things about this issue is that it's very difficult. I've been inundated with charts from both sides saying, we're right, no, we're right, no, they're wrong. But I think one thing that's important to think about is that right now I think everybody is a victim of rising health care costs. As you've heard, when you have a child who's born with cerebral palsy, just the medical cost of taking care of that child is very high. And I think that's what some of these awards are, not so much in the pain and suffering damages. It's simply it costs a lot of money to take care of people who are injured through medical malpractice, because medical care is very expensive and getting increasingly expensive. So I think part of what we're seeing is just a raw dollar problem that everyone
related to the whole healthcare crisis of cost in general.
Yeah, well, everyone points out that these damage awards are only going up as fast as medical inflation, and then what they don't say is that medical inflation is going up seven times faster than general inflation.
Well, but do you agree with
malpractice premiums are sort of a problem and an artifact of the fact that health costs are going up so fast?
Julie, do you agree with Leo Boyle's description of how American juries handle malpractice cases? He says only 96% of the time. In Massachusetts, for example, they decide for the doctor, that they are reasonable, that the awards are not out of line, that they're, you know, that they're reasonable, that they're even a little tight-fisted.
Well, those are studies that I haven't really looked that deeply into what exactly juries do, but I've certainly seen aggregate numbers that suggest how fast jury awards are going up, and those do seem to be tracking medical inflation. So both sides then say, well, gee, they're only going up as fast as medical inflation, but as the other side points out, medical inflation is going up a lot faster than everything else.
So would you agree that we can't lay this at the feet of juries and trial lawyers and say you're pushing this too far? Do you agree that it's the management of funds by health insurance companies, malpractice insurance companies, that's at the bottom of this, Julie?
Well, I think what's pretty clear is that it's a whole lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the problem, is that everybody's trying to say it's this, it's that, it's this. And I think what it really is everything. But I certainly agree that this is cyclical. I mean, that this is something that you see periodically. And it does tend to happen when the economy goes bad.
And that's the essence of it. That is at the core. Go back to the 90s. We had a roaring market from 1990 to 2000. You didn't hear a word about insurance premiums. There were loads of carriers around. And just one little vignette of where the money went. Mm-hmm. St. Paul Insurance has pulled out of a number of markets in malpractice nationally. They lost on one stock $108 million in Enron. I don't know what they lost in WorldCom. I don't know what else they lost. When you lose $108 million on one stock, that's the aggregate jury verdicts probably for several years in all of
them. Well, fine. That's easy to say. But the flip side of that is that those great returns in the market, as you're describing it, kind of subsidized the whole malpractice insurance industry. It made it possible to keep premiums down during a boom market. Wasn't that a good thing? The boom market's gone, and here we are. Reality, it's expensive.
We do, but we cannot look at the world since 2000. If you look at the world since 1990 to 2003, if rates have gone up 40% over 13 years, that's 3% a year. But what happened was, it's bunched into the last 3 years because there was a mad dash for cash in the 1990s.
Leo Boyle, are you afraid that Americans might in fact lose their right to go to court and receive decent compensation when they're severely maltreated in some kind of medical
circumstance? I am profoundly afraid of that. I mean, we have in this state a doctor who left the OR to go to an ATM. One of the doctors in West Virginia who walked...
He left the operating room to go
to a cash machine. In West Virginia, 9 of the striking doctors from one hospital have over $6 million in malpractice claims against them. In West Virginia, a doctor who was sent to the United States Congress to testify that his malpractice premiums were oppressive neglected to mention that he had a felony conviction for possession of cocaine and was on probation by the court for 5 years. So if God forbid those people make mistakes, to say to a family that, look, for the better of the insurance industry in this country, you're going to have to give up your rights and you're going to have to go bankrupt instead of the insurance company paying an award. I think that's not what our society is about. I mean, in West Virginia yesterday, I think it's important to know that the legislative committee studying this issue reported, quote, any limitations placed on the judicial system will have no immediate effect on the cost of liability insurance for health care providers, end quote, recommended no caps.
Let's get a doctor's voice back in here. Dr. Tony Balsamo joins us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He's an orthopedic surgeon. Good evening and welcome, Dr. Balsamo.
Thanks, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks so much for being with us. You've heard some of this conversation. The fingers are pointing in every direction here, Dr. Balsamo. What's your interpretation of what's going on? Is this about patients suing too much, juries awarding too much? Is it about an insurance industry that's not taking care of its business? Is it about doctors making too many mistakes?
Well, I think everything we heard about the insurance industry is obvious. The economic cycle, the business of practice of the insurance companies have a lot to do with the economic portions of the insurance business itself.
Mm-hmm.
Then we sit back and we have the lawyers. We have trial lawyers, and we just heard Leo talking. And it's amazing. When I sit back, let's just take my state, all right?
Pennsylvania.
All right. 56% of the money paid in Pennsylvania for compensation and malpractice claims in Philadelphia were spent. At the conclusion of the year 2000, all right, Philadelphia's total exceeded $325 million, equaling what was paid out in the whole state of California. I disagree with what Leo was talking about. The Health Act of 1975 in California saved $1 billion in liability premiums. Now, so we have two things going on. All I know is when I'm on call, I go into the emergency room and I see a patient. I don't go to look and see if they have insurance. I don't look to go see what's going on about getting paid. I took an oath. I think Greg would say that, Troy would say it. It's a privilege to be a physician. And that with that, we are going to have 2% or 1% of problems. He picked those cases.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that I think it was right that doctor left that OR? The problem is that doctor will leave the OR, and he'll go get a lawyer to represent him, and he'll go after somebody, and they'll end up giving him back his license. Let's take our state and talk about lawyers. Did you know that our state had 4,500 complaints in this past year?
In Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. And of those cases, only 31 cases were referred to the Supreme Court for discipline, and only 17 of those got disbarment.
So you're saying that there's a lot of frivolous suits being brought against doctors?
Correct. We had 3,300 malpractice suits in the city of Philadelphia in 1999. That's more than the whole state of California. So when Leo can make the statistics look any way he wants, because you're going to say, well, there wasn't that many, there was only six. But when you're sitting there and talking about some of these $100 million verdicts, and you start to realize that that verdict, that money, is going to wipe out an insurance fund. Let's take our state fund. What's going to happen with that? Those unreasonable excessive costs are going to be passed on in the form of increased health premiums, closed facilities, and reduced services.
So are you saying, Dr. Balsamo, let's cap awards? Let's reduce or let's put a limit on the ability of Americans to be compensated by juries for injury, pain, suffering, all the rest?
Let's get the money to where the action can be taken.
What do you mean by that?
Okay. I have a question for Leo. I represent someone, and you tell me you have, God forbid, this unforgiven outcome of a patient, and it's a $40 million settlement, okay? And they base that on how much it's going to take care of that patient to be alive, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Two is we give the money to the patient. They end the case. They walk in the room, and the lawyer takes what percent, Leo? 25%, 30%, 40%?
Go ahead.
He takes his 25, 30, 40% out of that. Now we have that money left over. They give it to the family. The family ends up wasting it, and we end up with a child that the state has to take for, and now we get taxed for that to take care of somebody.
So how should that family be taken care of?
I'm sorry?
So how should that family be taken care of?
How about if we give an annuity? How about if we try to at least get a major portion of that money put into something so that that money could be paid out for that child to take care of what's really important? The other thing we have to realize is that, as Dr. I think Sarko makes it, a bad outcome is not a malpractice problem. We're being questioned by our peers.
Mm-hmm.
In our state, take a look at HALT, H-A-L-T.org. It's amazing. I hit it for the first time this past week. I was amazed at what's going on. We had an F in our state for lawyers.
An F meaning what?
Based on how many have ended up getting any type of disciplinary action, what's really going on as far as any type of suits. At the same token, if we have a doctor that has his license pulled in another state, we let them come to our state. Why isn't there some type of a restriction? Because we're still at the same token, the lawyers will get involved in a situation that will do things. It's not the doctors, it's not the lawyers, it's not the insurance companies. We have to get the nation to sit down and discuss this in a way that the 2% of all three, the bad investment corporations, we had a law firm go, insurance company go out here, pick through about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
People walked out with millions of dollars.
Tony Wilson will stand by. I know you've got questions for Leo Boyhood, but our callers have a lot of questions for everyone here. I want to get them in. Wes is calling from Boston. Hi, Wes. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you tonight. I have a quick comment and a question.
Yeah.
I agree with Ms. Kovner's point that there are a lot of factors here. This is an accusation, but just a comment on a rather disturbing trend. I'm in medical school myself.
Okay.
And we are I've been considering radiology, and those of us who are interested in this are actually being actively discouraged from considering mammography. There's a...
By whom, Wes?
By specialists in the field, people who are already there.
Why?
And it has apparently something to do with litigiousness. There's a physical limit on the degree to which we can use x-rays to distinguish cancer tissue from normal tissue, so you
right.
can't catch every single cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the litigiousness of this particular field, many of us who are looking into this, it's disconcerting, are being pushed away from it.
So you're in medical school, you're thinking of getting into radiology, and people are
yeah.
saying, watch out, if you go in there, you're going to get your fingers burned, you're going to get sued.
Into mammography, which is very disconcerting because it's something that I had an interest in before, you know, hearing this from people above me. And just my quick question basically is I don't know the answer to this, is there malpractice in other fields like, business or law like there is in medicine? And
sure.
how are the technical details of all these things hashed out in the courtroom? It just seems very complicated.
Wes, we've got it. Thanks for your call, Leo Boyle.
Sure.
Quickly here.
Thanks for the question. And I would just urge you, Wes, I've been privileged to be representing patients and other injured people for over 30 years. The system is profoundly good. The jury system in America works profoundly well. And if you really want to know that, ask a defense lawyer. A defense lawyer in this state would never waive a jury. They will always go before the jury because they know the odds. And if you're in Massachusetts, your chances are 94% if you go to trial. And the standards is extremely high to win against a doctor. You have to prove that the doctor fell below the standard of care of the average qualified radiologist.
So do you think, Leo Boyle, that Wes is just hearing, fantastic tales of the deep here?
This
is a real student in a real medical school being discouraged from a real important career.
You shouldn't be, Wes. It's largely mythology what is reaching you. And if you went to a trial, watched a trial, talked to jurors who have sat on trials, your neighbors, you'll come away with a whole different understanding of it. And the system works very, very well. No defense lawyer, no doctor's lawyer in his right mind would waive a jury.
Well, here are two starkly different views of how the systems work, depending if you're looking from the lawyer's side or the doctor's side. We're hearing very different reports tonight. We are looking at America's medical malpractice crisis. You can join the conversation. Are patients too quick to go for the gold when something goes wrong, to exploit a mistake? Does medical malpractice bring justice or a loser-take-all lottery for the United States? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's medical malpractice crisis, about doctors on strike and premiums over the moon, about patients in some corners of the country in the lurch, as doctors say, we cannot afford to practice. You can join the conversation tonight. Should we cap malpractice awards, or is it the right of every American to sue and win big if it's justified? Have you filed suit against your doctor, and did you get what you deserved? I'm joined tonight by Dr. Tony Balsamo. He's an orthopedic surgeon in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In the studio by Leo Boyle. He's past president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America. And from Bethesda, Maryland tonight by Julie Rovner. She's health policy correspondent for National Public Radio. Julie Rovner, you've been hearing the back and forth between Leo and Dr. Balsamo. Where are we going to come out here? I don't hear you being too optimistic or forecasting a big federal cap coming down the pike. So what's the solution? Do we just wait for an economic rebound? What happens in the meantime to doctors bearing these enormous premiums?
Well, certainly we've seen a lot of activity in the states, both in the last crisis, somewhat this time. I think, you know, perhaps Congress at some point will come to some sort of a there are things you can do short of caps on damages, and there, I think, are some things that people might support. I heard Senator John Edwards over the weekend, who, of course, was a trial lawyer before
yes.
he came to the Senate, talking about getting certificates of merit for cases. That was something that President Clinton talked about back in the early 1990s. So
what does that mean, Julie, a certificate of merit
for a case?
It
would mean that an outside physician would have to basically pre-certify that a case had some merit. It would be a way to sort out what are obviously frivolous claims.
Got it.
That's something that's at least being talked about. There are other kinds of what they call alternative dispute mechanisms. There are certainly other ways to address this short of the things that really divide people, which are caps on damages. Whether or not they'll do that, I'm not that confident, but certainly if things get bad enough, one would think that people would start to look for solutions.
And in the meantime, in some areas, we see state governments stepping in to help insured doctors. West Virginia is proposing that now.
Absolutely, and I think that's what we're seeing. And as I said earlier, I think this crisis is sort of qualitatively different from previous ones just because the raw numbers are so much bigger. When premiums doubled, you know, 20 years ago, we weren't talking about $200,000 a year premiums. That's what we're talking about for some physicians now. I mean, the numbers, for whatever reason is causing it, the numbers really truly are terrifying for the physicians involved.
And this at a time when a lot of doctors are talking about lower incomes. Doctors in general, are not all of them, are making the kind of money they once did.
Which is part of the problem. Also, Medicare fees were cut last year. They may be cut again this year. So doctors who depend on Medicare are seeing lower fees. Managed care has squeezed fees, although that has bounced back a little bit. But yes, doctors, I think, on the one hand, they still make a lot of money. On the other hand, they don't make as much money as they used to.
We've got a real situation on our hands here, and a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Mary's calling. Good evening and welcome, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I had a couple of thoughts as I listened to this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I work at a hospital here in Massachusetts, and I know that everyone that comes to the emergency room as the physician in Pennsylvania must know they're screened to see how they can pay for their medical coverage, and they hand over everything they have in the way of insurance cards or promissory statements about how they'll pay. I doubt very seriously if this physician would actually take these people up after they're released from the emergency room and take them on as permanent patients.
If they didn't have coverage, you mean?
Them through their ongoing care.
Yeah.
Many physicians will not do that. Many physicians will not take people up, even for Medicare, now that the premiums have been reduced. I think the point he's making misrepresents what's happening for the indigent, the poor, and the people who aren't covered.
Another
point I want to make is, as Julie was concluding, there are many things to point to. There's so many reasons, so many causes, but among them, she doesn't point to the Enron insurance greed profit problem that may be undermining everybody's ability to get health care and provide health care.
What do you mean by that, Mary?
Well, that's the third element here. You're juxtaposing it, the lawyers versus the doctors,
yes.
But it's really the insurance company that's profiting the most whenever they want, and when they can't, they rake it off the people that provide and need health care.
You think they're taking too big a bite?
Then we've got a so-called compassionate conservative administration that's undermining social safety nets, turning people against the lawyers that try to help, like Leo, these people that are devastated by sad and wrongful medical care.
And Mary, you're a nurse, so you see this firsthand.
You're darn right I am. Mm-hmm. I was an operating room nurse. I've stood next to a surgeon who couldn't stop shaking, who cut somebody's ureters. That's not the point. The point is this administration, with supporting corporate profit and greed, has undermined our health care in America, and maybe insurance companies are not the way to go anymore.
Mary, thanks for your call. Tony Balsamo, I guess the first part of that went to you, and it wasn't straight on to malpractice, but on the issue of who gets coverage and how.
One thing that she did miss, though, if you see a patient in the emergency room, that is your obligation.
Mm-hmm.
That's your Hippocratic oath. You must follow that patient. I'm at Hahnemann, so if I come in and I see a patient and I'm on call that night and I have ER call, it's my responsibility to do that, and that's wrong. But I think the thing that I think we have to express to the people that there are physicians that are going to make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's recurrent, let's eliminate it. We have a problem with the American Medical Society. We have to get rid of the doctors that are having recurrency. The problem is that they'll get representation, and you end up going after them, and you end up personally putting up your own liability.
I don't, Tony, I don't really understand that point.
Leo Boyle?
May I, Tom?
Yes.
I have trouble understanding that point. I mean, the notion that we wouldn't root out amongst our own, whether they be lawyers or doctors, the people who are causing the harm seems to me fundamentally wrong. And
but is it actually happening?
That's right.
I know in Massachusetts, I can't speak. You had some statistics in Pennsylvania, Tony, and I can't speak to them. But I know we have an aggressive bar council here in Massachusetts, and a lot more lawyers get prosecuted than doctors. But I mean, that's beside the point. Mary has put the scalpel right in the issue, and the issue is Enron is the emblem of it. Enron, WorldCom, the destruction of people's 401ks. When you take 40, 50% of the value out of everybody's retirement plan, insurance companies get hurt too. They're investors. The difference between you and me, Tom, and an insurance company is I can't turn to somebody, or the ordinary house owner can't turn to somebody to get their money back. The insurance companies can. And they have generated this false debate. And you have referred earlier, Tony, to the Hippocratic Oath. I must say that for the medical profession to lobby against the legal rights of their patients is doing harm. And the Hippocratic Oath is first do no harm.
And you're saying that right now, in this kind of work stoppages and uproar around the country, doctors are lobbying against patients?
They are doing harm to the legal rights of their patients.
Dr. Balsamo?
It's amazing. I'm doing legal rights. I'm having top doctors leave my state that could teach my residents mm-hmm. better than anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm having people unable to get operated on because of legal rights. I mean, it's hard for me to sit back and say that, am I going to do 100% everything right in my life? You sit back and you tell me that when I'm sitting at 4,500 lawyers in this state having that problem. We should be watching each other. I agree with what you said, but it's wrong for me and then for her to say that, you know, the one patient that cut the ureter. It is going to happen. And if that doctor was drunk or he left the OR, I don't want him to be part of my society. I don't want him in the operating room with me. But to eliminate the doctors that are out there practicing good medicine, I have never paid out a suit in 27 years of practicing. I am paying $127,000.
That's for 1 year's coverage for malpractice. That's a lot of money.
Okay. Now watch this. If you take what's going on at the other end, I'm trying to attract physicians.
Mm-hmm.
I have someone finishing up at the Mayo Clinic that when I say well-trained, phenomenal. Day one, walking into my state, $100,000. We have liability premiums at University of West Virginia Medical School, 80% up in 4 years. Penn State Medical School pays $22 million in liability premiums. It expects to go up 35%. We have a problem, Leo. Your industry, your law people, and the doctors and the insurance companies,
we need a statesman.
We need no Democrat, no Republican. We need a statesman that's going to stand up and do what's right for the American public.
But, Leo Boyle, who's going to do that? All the trial lawyers have an interest in big settlements.
Tony, I have to put a footnote. You just ticked off who you consider to be the players, the insurance companies, the societies, the lawyers, the doctors. What about the patients? It isn't about the lawyers. It's about the patients.
Don't put the patient. My patient is the most important thing to me. So don't try to put the lawyer act together.
The patient is
the most important thing about what I just said.
Let's put the
insurance company, the lawyers, and the doctors put the patient first, which they all should do.
Let's look at this from the standpoint of the patient and the notion that we would reward insurance companies for abusing their insureds, which they are doing to the doctors. And there's no question that premiums have gone up. The insurance industry is abusing your profession, Tony. And the notion that we would bail them out by disenfranchising the patients is just offensive to many of us.
There we go. We are almost out of time here. Julie Ravner, I want to give you last word. Where's the out? Where's the solution here?
Well, I think what we've just heard is why there has been no solution.
Well, mean, we sure
a
have.
A lot of people pointing fingers at a lot of other people.
You've got it.
Maybe why this never really gets resolved.
Well, it looks like we're going to have fights right across the country this year. There may be caps, there may not. Caps may be a solution, and they may not. We will stay tuned and watch closely. Dr. Tony Balsamo in Philadelphia, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you, sir.
And Leo Boyle, here in the studio, past president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for doing the issue.
And Julie Rovner, health policy correspondent for National Public Radio, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Well, there we are, a difficult situation and no easy answer in sight, but we've hit it head on. You can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, one person's eyesore is another's cultural heritage. This is On Point. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania was once the steel capital of the world. At its peak, over 31,000 employees of the Bethlehem Steel Corporation forged America's railroads, ships, tanks, and aircraft. The furnaces were shut down in 1995, and now the 17-story industrial behemoths that dominate the skyline face demolition. They are the last link to the city's most glorious past. Lynn Beadle is a lifelong Bethlehem resident and professor emeritus of civil engineering at Lehigh University. In this radio diary, he tells why it would break his heart if even one of the towers were brought down.
These five blast furnaces line the south bank of the Lehigh River. They're like the equivalent of a 17-story building. And so they really shoot up into the air over what is of necessity in a steel production facility, low-rise buildings. So they really stand out. They're the symbol. They're round with a lot of equipment around them because they're stacked, a lot of pipes and tubing and connecting walkways. You might liken it to a grain storage elevator, but not smooth. It's a more irregular, industrial-looking facility. No, they wouldn't be preserved for their beauty. They'd be preserved for their symbolism, the image of a city that during the steel era attracted the real industrial giants to the area. They go back before World War I. One goes back to 1903. I mean, they're really old. And at the time they were built, of course, they were state-of-the-art. There's nothing like them. It's the only place in the country that we can show where the iron industry grew into the steel industry. Another important factor to me is that the Lehigh Valley, because of Bethlehem Steel, was the Bethlehem Iron Works then, was the locus for the Industrial Revolution in the heavy industry side of it. If you go back part of a generation, you find that Bethlehem Steel Company was an important part of countless Bethlehem lives. When you figure during World War II, there were some 30,000 people, 31,000, 32,000 people employed by Bethlehem Steel. Now, this is in a community of 70,000 people. So that's a big percentage. And so you find fathers, grandfathers, brothers, uncles that all worked at Steel. I think most of us feel it's a matter of valuing your heritage.
Lynn Beadle lives in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. The five steel furnaces will cost over $1 million each to restore. Residents of Bethlehem hope the National Park Service will save the towers by designating them historic landmarks. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Tamar Morad, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog. With help from Todd Brubaker, our senior producer is Graham Griffith. On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.